in a second, I'm sure.
Boy, this has been a controversial issue.
All right, we're back from a short recess, and I believe NSP has completed his presentation, Mr. Simpson, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
All right, and I believe...
Your Honor, if he would be all right with you, I'd like to talk to Mr. Cedarquist again for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
That's okay with everyone. Okay. Over break, that's a danger taking a break. We come up with other questions.
Well, we'll do that in a second, Commissioner, okay. But I just want to clear up the situation in regard to perhaps further witnesses. I believe Mr. Grumman and Mr. Simpson have conferred, and there's no need to bring any other witnesses on other than the two we've had at this time, correct?
That's my understanding.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Limoges, who we had available, is certainly not qualified to discuss exactly the issues that were raised regarding contractors and substations. We're happy to make an additional filing to the commission to let them know what we've done in response to this one incident.
And it appears that this hearing may not be the end of this matter. There may be some further discussions and stipulations, perhaps, in furtherance of the settlement, I guess you might say.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So okay, that's where we stand there. Then we'll recall Mr. Cedarquist, please.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just need to remind you, you're still considered to be under oath, Mr. Cedarquist. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Dave, for taking time to answer a few more questions that, like I said before, you and I have talked a lot about reliability for many years now. I need to be convinced a little better that, I'll give you my thoughts, is that obviously I haven't made any final decisions on anything, but when I look at ways to improve reliability, I'm not convinced that refunding money back to customers really helps reliability. I understand the company views it as a penalty, but in the broader scheme of things, I think that a $50 refund back to an individual quite honestly creates more problems for the company and customers, because if they have a damage in excess of hundreds of dollars, $50 will actually probably just upset them. In big companies, it doesn't make a lot of sense. They're going to be worried more about long-term improving reliability. You've got college kids living there, four of them in an apartment, and they break up $50 checks. I mean, it's, to me, a better incentive is if you do good, you get more rate of return. If you don't, you get less rate of return. And we focus on those type of plans. So that's my backdrop. Convince me otherwise.
So we do you agree or disagree or have comment? Or
yeah, there's a
all
lot
that
there.
Setup.
Yeah.
Well, originally when we were throwing ideas around with staff on, okay, we have this commission desire for the company to put together a reliability proposal, when we first started throwing ideas out, initially we felt that we were getting direction from the commission to kind of shy away from the $50 credit thing. And so what we had proposed was, well, let's put a measure out there on the multiple outage issue and just say if we have X percent of customers that experience more than three outages, you can either get dinged or get an award that way, and set it up much like the Sadie one, and that would avoid the actual payments to customers. But through our discussion, it was felt, the $50 credit has a lot of advantages too. First of all, it engages customers. Now they're engaged in the reliability effort. They're aware of it.
You think they could manipulate that to return $50 more because they complain they have more outages?
Well, I mean, we go through a fairly exhaustive process of verifying outages at homes and businesses, but, I mean, there's always a few people out there trying to beat the system. But the other thing, you know, that the multiple outage reporting kind of does for us is, as Ms. Kopic indicated, it does give us good indication of where we might have some pockets of problems on our system.
You could still do all that the same.
Yes. That can be done the same. So again, we're certainly open if the commission believes that you know there's something related to that we could still do. Staff, I mean, again, we're willing to sit down and kind of explore that a little further. But we actually thought in the proposal that this would be, we wanted the measures to be kind of diverse. We wanted a broad measure. We wanted a customer experience measure. And so we had the survey and the CME, and we thought those kinds of get to some of those local things that you guys had expressed some concerns over during the rate case. Recall Mr. Gopper and some of his issues. Those tend to get hidden by the Sadie things because they're so broad. But so we were trying to put a mix in there, but there are other ways to do that and accomplish that mix without actually implementing a credit.
AECH.
And you're right. In some cases, it would be sort of a dissatisfier depending on the situation.
Okay. I lost my train of thought on that.
I
know we may have some other information about contractors. But you know, once again, in the rate case and others, Xcel Energy has removed the number of linemen and it's gone to subcontracting out linemen. So it's really, how can we not include contractors in the matrix?
Well,
no matter what happens, it seems to me that if it's a contractor or subcontractor somehow tied back to Xcel Energy NSP, that you're liable for what they do.
Yeah, again, we need to have that discussion because if we're going to go through with a plan like this, we will be reporting to the staff and the commission. What days are we pulling out? What days are we excluding? What outages and types of outages are we excluding? We'll want to report those to staff, and we'll probably have to have a discussion about does that one make sense to really exclude. So I guess I would prefer to leave it at that if situations like that do occur, and they are rare, but if they do occur, that's a good opportunity for the company and the staff to sit down and go, should that one really be excluded? That was human error. You guys should have known better, blah, blah.
Isn't that the point? To me, that was the point that I was trying to get to, is that we take the gray area out of it. If it's a weather event that something happens, fine. But if it's human error, the human error of an Xcel operator, it's your fault. If it's human error of an Xcel contractor, it's the company's responsibility.
Well, except that I would say that in these situations, it's not obvious that it's human error. Sometimes, you know, you can have a situation that might appear to be, you know, a human error situation when really you do an investigation and you find out, no, that wasn't a human error problem. So they're not as black and white as you might think.
But even okay, human error, I understand. But if a line goes down, that's not human error, but it's still a line went down that Xcel is responsible to maintain, so it's an Xcel outage. I don't think the gray area has to be as gray. So I guess I'm trying to walk through here a little bit to get your thoughts on it. I mean, I'm a pretty black and white guy. If we've got a big thunderstorm, tornado comes through town, knocks out a bunch of switches, easy. Short of weather events, flooding events, it seems like Xcel has responsibility for the outages.
So, and again, those are 99% of the cases. So okay. I think we're on the same page. So what do? Do you build in some kind of an exception beforehand for the one oddball outage that doesn't fall under a legitimate strange event? And I'm just saying, rather than try and build that in the front end, let's deal with those once in every 25-year events or whatever. Let's deal with those with a discussion and say, okay, yeah, this one, okay, it's on us. So I just think some flexibility that way might help in the process rather than trying to develop something up front.
All right, thank you.
In my opinion.
Thank you, Commissioner Kong. I just want to say again, we're getting some noise from out there someplace. So if you're out there listening, please put your phone on mute so we don't get that extra conversation here. Any further questions of Mr. Cedarquist? Thank you, Mr. Cedarquist. All right. Then, again, I think we're done with the NSP's presentation at this time. Mr. Grumman, you have a witness to call.
Thank you, Your Honor. I call Avisu staff calls Mike Diller.
Mr. Diller, I believe you heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury, correct?
Yes, I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Grumman, please.
Thank you. Mr. Diller, if you could please state your name and your position for the record.
Mike Diller, D-I-L-L-E-R, and I'm Director of Economic Regulation.
If you could please provide to us today a summary of your qualifications.
Sure. I've worked for the commission for about a quarter of a century now. I've testified in several cases before the commission. I worked on NSP's, managed NSP advocacy staff's position in NSP's last rate case, which led to a settlement that included reliability measures and issues. And so I think today I'm qualified to speak to this matter.
May I approach, Your Honor?
You may.
Thank you. Mr. Diller, I'm showing you a two-page document. Mark Exhibit 4, do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
And what is this document?
It's my response to NSP's proposed reliability performance plan.
And is this document dated?
July 16, 2012.
Thank you. My offer, Exhibit 4.
Any objection to Exhibit 4?
No objections, Your Honor.
Okay, I'll admit Exhibit 4.
Your Honor?
Yes.
I have a copy of that, but I only have one page.
Oh, okay.
So
there's two pages,
missing
correct?
Page
correct.
Two.
Do you want to see my page?
I would like to, yeah.
I could make photocopies real quick, too.
Maybe somebody could make another copy, but in the meantime, I'll let her look at mine.
Thank you.
Everybody else have two pages? Why don't you proceed?
Oh, thank you. Mr. Diller, is it your position that advocacy staff is fine with NSP's proposal, except that the SAIDI benchmark needs to be strengthened by 2 minutes?
Yes.
Why should the commission agree with you?
Well, actually, when I put together my recommendation and concluded what I did, I kind of expected Xcel Energy to send me a FedEx package with the settlement agreement in it, because I thought 2 minutes probably wasn't that big of a deal. If you read my testimony, then you see where I kind of talk about a golf handicap and how hard it is to, when you get to in a low handicap position, to cut your game by two strokes. That's similar to what's going on here. But I still feel pretty strongly that there is room for two more minutes here. And I've prepared some written testimony here to add to the record that I think I'll just read into the record, if that's all right.
All right. We already have your pre-filed testimony,
yeah, this
correct?
This is just some extra words I wrote down last night to provide to the commission.
To kind of supplement your pre-filed testimony. Okay.
Well, I don't know if it's...
Well, in furtherance of it, I guess we might say.
Sure.
Sure. Let's do that then, Mr. Diller, please.
I believe that the company believes that they're already achieving very good results and that they are therefore entitled to some degree to a good chance of attaining a reward each year. And that might be overstating a little bit, but I saw this attitude a little bit when agreeing to the performance-based regulatory plan back in the early 2000s. And I struggled a little bit with the performance standard there with regard to reliability. We actually had two standards. And then they went out and achieved or exceeded those standards 9 out of the 10 times in the 5 years to follow. And so I see a little bit a thread of that attitude, if you will, in their testimony here today and in their application and file testimony. And my position is that ratepayers in North Dakota cannot afford an agreement where they stand to gain an average of about $100,000 a year for the convenience of more than 3 outages in a year, juxtaposed to a $250,000 award to $1 million, depending upon earnings levels, if the target's not strenuous enough. The commission can observe for itself if you have the company's initial application. Attachment C is, to me, the most important document we have in this proceeding. you can see there from attachment C that a retroactive application of the proposed target minus the impact of the IntelliTeam switches would have resulted in an award for NSP 2 out of the last 5 years if you just have a retroactive application. So then, if NSP hadn't changed a thing except to install IntelliTeam switches, it would have collected between $500,000 and $2 million of additional revenue over the past 5 years, depending on NSP's levels at that time. It makes sense to me that if the company accomplishes a fair SAIDI standard, then it should expect to earn its authorized return, all things being equal. In the competitive markets, excellent service is often followed by profits, right? So I'm less worried about the possibility of paying out $1 million when excellent results are achieved and earnings are low than I am paying the minimum of $250,000 annually if the standard's too low. NSP argues in this case for a SAIDI benchmark based upon historical SAIDI results and then adjusted downward for the major event days that we heard earlier, the installation of the IntelliTeam switches and the 15% to account for other recent improvements. The 15% stretch factor was used in their 2001-2005 PBR plan, also known as the PLUS plan. And given the paradigm shift in NSP's North Dakota focus on reliability, I think the stretch factor needs to be increased beyond normal levels. The commission ordered and the ratepayers are paying for additional resources and services necessary to improve reliability. NSP's North Dakota operations now have an engineer dedicated to improving reliability, which is not directly reflected in the SAIDI benchmark. Tree trimming work has been increased by 25%, which incidentally is designed to take care of the number one cause of outages and is not reflected directly in the SAIDI benchmark. NSP is working feverishly to replace all non-standard 500 MCM cable, another significant contributor to system outages and not reflected directly in the SAIDI standard. NSP's reliability, both in terms of expectations from the commission and its own processes, has changed dramatically. And while this is indeed an art and not a science, the paradigm shift needs to be more fully recognized. Commissioners, I believe in free enterprise and marketplace solutions, but that world does not exist for NSP, and your job is to create a market-like environment for NSP. In a free market society, others are free to compete against you, and if you don't keep up, you are gone. I do not find it compelling that NSP is comparing itself to the second quartile of other Midwest utilities or even to its other operations in other states, for those market forces are not at work there any more than they are here. NSP's North Dakota operations should always be in the first quartile by virtue of its service territory, along with the excellent work that we should expect and have come to expect. NSP operates what are essentially three island communities in Fargo, Grand Forks, and Minot, with very little rural territory. NSP's North Dakota operations are quite dense in comparison to most, if not all, Midwest utilities, making rapid response to outages much easier. With a new focus and new resources being dedicated to North Dakota's reliability, it is not unrealistic to expect top-tier results going forward. So I argue that you are the only ones that can ensure a market-like solution and that my proposal is better. While NSP's proposal is rather mathematical through and through, I've inserted a very small adjustment that I think is quite pragmatic. Given the new capital investments and resource allocations to improve reliability, the Commission should not agree to a standard that has already been achieved in the past. My two-minute adjustment achieves that, but not by much. In fact, if you adjust past results just for the impact of the IntelliTeam switches, NSP would have achieved an award for 2 out of the last 5 years under my proposal, no different than under NSP's proposal. While the adjustment is not much, I think there is value in moving the standard into a new realm of higher expected service when communicating it to employees, when justifying it to the public, and in recognition of the paradigm shift that has and is occurring in the reliability programs and processes already approved by the commission and being implemented. And that concludes my opening remarks.
I have no further questions. Subject to redirect.
Thank you. Mr. Simser, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you very much, Mr. Diller. I very much appreciate your input. At a baseline fundamental, it seems that, or would you agree that you and the company are in agreement as to the fundamental structure of this plan?
We are, as Mr. Cedarquist indicated, and I indicated in my initial filing. This has been a cooperative effort, and Mr. Cedarquist, to his credit, has done most of the heavy lifting, but staff has been involved in the process all along. We started with a very large amount of data and different ways and methods that we could go, and this is a culmination of all those efforts. I'll say this, if you'll allow me, that there isn't a perfect solution here. Every method and everything, any idea we come up will have flaws in it. But in my opinion, we've refined it, we've narrowed it down to things that are really important and really critical to get employees motivated and interested in this. And so, yes, short answer, I'm in agreement with the method. I just think that we need to increase the stretch factor just a bit.
And what I'm reading here is that you still believe that a SADE score of 58.8 is actually a pretty good score nonetheless.
Oh, sure. It is.
And also, one of the things if I'm understanding your testimony correctly, you seem to tie this excellence threshold to the fact that it should be increased because the company, if you applied it retroactively, would have hit it twice in 5 years. What would be the right sort of mix? Once in 5 years?
I maybe you missed that last paragraph I read, and I did read it kind of quickly, but. I'm not entirely averse to mathematical approaches to anything. Mine is rather mathematical as well. I just simply lowered it 2 minutes, gets it below a threshold that has been achieved by NSP. And so to me, that provides cover for the commission. It provides cover even for NSP when you're explaining it to the public that, look, this level of service has never been achieved before. And if we can get to that level, then there are rewards to be expected.
That sounds reasonable. It sounds to me that both there's some room between 58.8 and 56.8 at some point, where since this is an art and not a science, we may be able to have a collaborative art project.
I don't think so.
Okay. you raised
more like a settlement discussion to me.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, is that something that staff would be interested in trying to work collaboratively to find some number?
Staff's always willing to work with the company. I'm fairly confident and fairly opinionated about this 2 minutes. And I guess from the witness stand, I feel compelled to let her ride and see what the commission decides. But we're always available for discussions.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Simser. Did everybody get, there was some people had missing the second page. Everybody got the second page of Exhibit 4? All right. Ms. Jeff Kotsako, please. You have any questions?
Yeah, Mike, could you just give me a summary of why you are not recommending a penalty on the rate of return, you know, sure. The stick being rate of return instead of the customer payment?
Sure. I don't want to wax too philosophical here, but I'll do a little bit, and you can pull me back whenever you feel like you need to. But some of it is just the way we all have different worldviews. And I've always found in raising children and managing people that carrots are more effective than sticks. And in this case, it's not that I'm against a stick altogether, but if you want to make this symmetrical, then by design you have to increase the benchmark. And so if you do that, I think you lose some impetus for employees working their butts off to improve reliability. And so that perhaps comes out of my worldview to some degree. But I really believe that we've created a very hard threshold, if you'll take my extra 2 minutes, a very hard threshold to achieve. And therefore, it should indeed only be an award scenario. I can tell you this. I believe, if I can remember back that far when we started this process with Mr. Cedarquist, I believe that he had put together some various calculations and plans, and indeed he did have a reward and a penalty proposal. And it was probably more from my interest that we got to where we are today with a hard threshold that's going to be difficult to achieve reward only. And then the CME proposal just kind of fell out after that. It just seemed like kind of a natural progression of discussions that, okay, if we're going to have a reward only, that's going to be a very tough standard. We need to have something on the other side where it's a penalty only. And make sure everyone understands these penalties are not to be included in rate case expense in the future. This comes right out of earnings. There's no way to recover it. And that answer your question?
Yes. I was just going to follow up because you've heard some discussion about some questions in like Commissioner Kalk's mind and others about whether the CME penalty is really worth it. It might cause more trouble than it's worth, those sorts of things. How do you feel? What you just answered the question and you said it was a natural progression for you, but what if there was only the harder threshold and the benefit, the reward, and nothing on the other side, no CME credit.
No CME. Well, I'd certainly feel more comfortable if we use Mike Diller's benchmark, but I think I have to agree with the other witnesses here. I think the CME idea is fantastic. I take a lot of consumer complaint calls myself, and I know how bothersome outages are. I hear what Commissioner Kalk is saying, and these very small situations where they burn down 19 houses in Fargo or the wires in Fargo, and they cause all kinds of problems. That is so far out of normal, at least in my experience, that didn't really enter my mind that much when we were working on this. I love the idea that customers see the consequences or see the benefits of having lived through several outages. I love that about it. And so I wouldn't want to give that up. I mean, the commission can do what it likes. But
thank you.
Well. Thank you, Ms. Jeffco-Sackle. Commissioner Fetch, do you have any questions of Mr. Diller?
Well, just to follow up on your testimony, your analogy to child rearing and life experience about carrots being better than sticks,
right.
To affect, I assume, the proper better response. Okay. Taking that from that premise, you applied that somewhat objectively in coming up with that, let's just lower it 2 minutes. And you were saying that the threshold should be very hard, very difficult to achieve, very tough. When you're talking about incentive, though, shouldn't it be something that is reasonably attainable to be an incentive? Don't you disincentive if it's so hard that, and so difficult that it can only be achieved through really, really extraordinary means? Isn't there some line in there for it should be difficult, but why should it be very tough, very difficult?
You've hit on the very argument in this hearing. You can move the standard, the benchmark, from very difficult up, and then you can build a range around that, and then you can have more winners and more losers depending on what happens. You can do that. We did that in the early 2000s. The difference here is just simply that that we made a decision, and again, probably a little at my doing, we made the decision rather than have lots of winners and losers potentially to make it very hard, and the reward will only be earned in really good service years. Either method works, as I said earlier on. There is no perfect method. We certainly could go back to what we did with the performance-based regulatory plan in the early 2000s. I don't think you lose an incentive, Commissioner Fetch, because they're going to be out on average $100,000 for these CME payments. They've got to make that up somehow. And if you just go, that standard's too hard, we're not going to work at it. That's a losing proposition. They're in the business to make money, and I don't think another 2 minutes is going to remove their incentive to accomplish that. I don't.
The CME, as you're calling it, a CME penalty, you know, that is a stick, as it were, in the analogy of sticks and carrots. The SADE threshold of whatever it turns out to be, 58.8, 56.8, something in between, that is a carrot.
Yes.
Okay. you know, I like both parties have said, this is an art, not a science, to come up with this. Well, it seems like there is a lot of science involved. You know, I struggled through, you know, all of these calculations and all of the acronyms, first of all, you've got a cheat sheet of the acronyms. No fair. All right. You know, I struggled through all of that. So it does seem like there is a pretty, you know, at least somewhat scientific basis for coming up with the SADE number and all the other acronyms. But as I understand from your testimony, you know, then taking that figure and saying, but it should be more difficult, and based on, you know, the years of being able to achieve and you know, it should be something that is so difficult to attain that everyone in the company will become engaged and say, you know, we have got to really, you know, meet this, buckle down and work harder to meet this standard. And, you know, for this commission, the overall bottom line is, whether it's 58.8, 56.8, something in between, whatever. As I understand our charge here, and what we are interested in is is the attention to reliability, increasing that reliability so that in the bottom line, the customer is the one that we're concerned about. The outages that customers will may or may not be experiencing, we want that to be as low as possible. Still getting to that, you know, I don't know at this point if the company has put enough diligence and is, you know, into that final number. I don't know if the staff is being a little too stringent. I don't know where that's going to fall. I'm not convinced. I hear the company, though, saying, we can talk about this. There may still be room to move this. I hear you say there is no room for that. I'm opinionated, I'm set, and this is where it's at. I guess that's my question to you. Is that where it's at with advocacy staff?
Anytime you're in a hearing such as this, it's incumbent upon me to represent the ratepayers' interests, and I'm going to come out swinging. If I don't get a FedEx envelope in the mail saying, yeah, we accept your, and here's a settlement agreement, then I'm going to fight hard. That's just the way it is, and I'm not going to give that up here on the witness stand.
Okay, so you're waiting for so if a FedEx envelope appears, you may be willing to.
Where
are we at, Mike?
Well,
it doesn't mean other commissioners would agree, though. That's where the dilemma, Mike's.
Right.
I think where we are is I've agreed to talk to the company. The company's agreed to talk to me. We have a 2-minute difference. You know, if we have settlement discussions when this hearing's over, whether I can twist their arm enough to get 2 minutes or whether they twist mine back and convince me with some other ideas or some other things that we haven't seen today, then maybe I back off and go with their 58 minutes. I can't presume to know what might occur in those kinds of settlements. I'm just here to represent my case today and do it in as convincing a manner as I can.
Okay. So your position is that they should be able to and they ought to be held to a standard higher than, or lower, as it were, than a standard higher, but a figure lower than what they have proposed.
That's correct, and it's a standard that they've not achieved, to my knowledge, to date. That sounds unfair. I hear what you're saying. It sounds unfair, but we haven't. The company has begun to implement a lot of new things that the commission ordered and required them to do, the ratepayers are paying for, and it's not fully reflected in there. So then the question is, does the 15% capture all of that or not? That's the question. And that's where the art comes in. There isn't any proof solid that 15% is any better than my extra 2 minutes, making the stretch factor maybe, I don't know, 18% or... I haven't made that calculation, but Commissioner Fetch, the reason I like the additional 2 minutes is it gets us to a level that, as far as I know, has never been accomplished by Xcel Energy. And I find that something that I can share with ratepayers when they call me and ask questions about why'd you do this or why'd the commission agree to that? It gives me cover, gives you cover, gives everyone cover, I think. And it, given the paradigm shift in what they're doing in North Dakota, I think my 2 minutes is reasonable.
Okay, thank you for that. And I liked your comments about the SEMI penalty, the SEMI idea, and $50 may not seem like a lot, but it may to a customer who you're getting calls. You say you get calls from customers, and as I take it from what you've said, this would be something to show to them, to give to them, that, you know, a carrot for the customers, basically, that, yes, you know, reliability is important, and, you know, if they're experiencing these outages, and, you know, God forbid, if it would be 4, 5, 6, they would be getting something back for that. Okay, I appreciate that. I don't have any more questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Fetch. Commissioner Calk, please.
Is there any questions left, Bonnie? I appreciate it. That was all.
To do my job, that was, then, Commissioner.
I'm going to continue on what you started, because I think you're right to the point. I think that we went through the rate case, and we said we want to have better reliability. So the company came back with IntelliSwitches. They came back with tree timing. They came back with a dedicated engineer. They came back with, you know, the enhanced metering over the last few years. So why maybe it should be 45 minutes, right? I mean, to say any number right now, to me, is arbitrary. We don't know. We were convinced in the rate case that this would improve reliability. I wish we could go through and figure out if we'd have asked them to what number. Maybe we did. But we were absolutely convinced that, and they were too, that if we do all this, it'll definitely increase reliability. So to me, maybe that number isn't far enough. I mean, have we gone far enough, Mike? Should I ask for 56 minutes?
That is a very difficult question, and one that I don't know that I can answer, quite frankly.
How does this get renewed? Let's say we agree on something here. The commission votes. Does this in effect forever? Is this reviewed every year? Is this I guess I can't remember. It doesn't jump out at me how we review this.
Well, once it's implemented, I don't think that we would be looking at changing
until another rate
changing
case, perhaps.
The benchmark during the three-year period, but. I can talk a little bit maybe to that. I was thinking as I listened to testimony earlier that because I sense that you really like that stick end of things, and I was thinking, well, what if we did make it 45 or 32 or something that was just ridiculous and they had no hope of meeting, and then we said, on top of that, you don't make any money. Your profits are eliminated for that year if you don't achieve 45. Would that be a serious stick? Yes, it would. But the consequences may not be something that we're willing to live with. The company goes bankrupt. That's not good. So there is that friction on both sides, and there isn't a perfect.
But that's where I'm going, Mike. Is that I don't think this is the first time in a while we've done this with NSPXL. So whatever we come up with here, maybe we should look at it a year from now. Was my point that we, you know, if we do something now that lays effects 10 years down the road and it wasn't quite right, what's the mechanism? Should there be a mechanism to come back and review this? Like a rate case, once it gets locked in stone, unless the company comes back or we ask them to come back, should there be a, we'll look at this 24 months from now?
I would say if that is really a sticking point to the commission, then that
it's not a sticking point, just a thought
no,
that we're...
Well, I think if that's very important to the commission, then we certainly could look at it after the first year. And the problem is then, you know, you've communicated this idea to your employees, and they're raring to go, and they know what the number is, and they're trying to get to that number, and then
we come in and
we tweak it and change it a little bit. Employees will start to begin to wonder, whoa. I mean, what's the number going to be next year? You know, well,
okay.
Right. So I think there's value in making our best guess. This is not a forever thing. It's for 3 years, you know, and like I said, that's some of the reason why I pressed it all the way down as far as I thought I could get away with, and evidently it was too far because I didn't get away with it. But
okay. Mike, what's your understanding of, okay, so they have three outages, the minutes are there, no penalty. The fourth outage, there's the penalty, the customer refund comes back. So then does the clock reset? Or if it's the fifth outage, the sixth outage, is there, I mean, how does this pancake over, or does it reset after the outage?
Each year. So at the end of the year, if you've had more than three outages, then you get a check for $50, whether you had six, seven, or 10. It's $50. You don't get $50 for each additional outage beyond the three. It's just $50, and it's fairly significant, as Betsy testified. This is a tenfold. That's the first time I'd heard that. That's a tenfold increase in comparison to what other commissions.
But the $50 only goes back to those individual customers that were affected, not the whole Xcel Energy.
Right.
Not all 88,000 customers.
Right. Just the yeah.
But should there be where, if in the first month the Bill and Jane up in North Fargo have had three outages, and over the end of that year they've had 20 outages, should there be another trigger that at the eighth outage that there's another $50 that goes back?
I guess that'd be something we'd have to go back and look at. That's not something that I guess popped into my head as we were plotting and planning.
Because as you pointed out, and you're right, I'm not sold on the $50 back. I am more sold on if there's certain problems and you reduce the earnings. But you don't think that's a good idea because of why exactly? Just you like more of the carrot approach, but instead, because I think the $50 is a stick. So to me, it'd be better that if we're going to do that some other way. In their rate of return.
Can you rephrase your question?
Okay. Instead of, if we have a threshold of three outages, more than three, instead of doing the $50 refund to customers, that's where I think their rate of return should be reduced a little bit. Do you think that'd be more or less effective than the current model?
I don't think the customers then are part of the transaction. They don't really know what happened to NSP.
Yes, they do. They could say their NSP had a high outage volume in Fargo, so their rate of return was reduced. That's what I would say.
That doesn't mean much to the average customer. That doesn't mean much. It's too far removed from their day-to-day transactions, activities, and life. But on the other hand, getting a $50 credit is very visible. It also, another thing, it helps me when dealing with consumer complaint calls, when they call and say, I've had six outages in the last 2 weeks. Well, that now I know that they're actually, if they don't get a check, we're going to get a phone call, or that causes me to look into it and make sure that they did get $50 credit because I got this complaint call. I think it brings some transparency to it that it doesn't exist when it's just an ROE adjustment that really the outside of this room, nobody understands too much of that.
Last stream of questions, I think, Mike, is the you've been following the discussion about Xcel NSP having responsibility for contractors, subcontractors. I'm not talking about that one incident we're all talking. I'm just talking in general. It seems to me that anybody that Xcel contracts should be responsible for. I'm just curious. You haven't had much comments about how they go into outage determination, because to me, outage determination is more important than I could agree to 65 minutes if they set the standard for determination the way that was very restrictive. It's back and forth.
Right. Chris just sent me a NARUC bulletin yesterday, and it described the New York process for what we're talking about here today. And part of their process is they have hearings and they talk about these event days and determine whether or not they were controllable or not controllable. I'm sure it's more expansive than I just explained it there, but that's generally what I read in the bulletin. And we certainly can do that, and it will increase administrative work that the commission does and that the company does. I actually think Mr. Cederquist has probably hit it on the head. For the very few times that this occurs, let's deal with those on a case-by-case basis rather than building some policy or procedure or built-in hearings just in case something like that happens. Most of the time, I think we're going to know, yes, ice storm, yes, wind storm, those are very clear. The substation one, I can see them arguing that, but, you know, I was trying to think as this went along. I've been here 25 years. The only other one I could think of that we might have argued about was, you know, Grand Forks lost $1 million transformer a few years back, and it was in the dead of winter, as I recall. It was very critical. They didn't have a transformer in North Dakota. They didn't have any crews in North Dakota that had that expertise to even do anything about it. And so, but when you're talking about $1 million worth of assets sitting on the ground, not used, just sitting there in case one goes bad, you can under, I'm telling you all that because there could be lots of discussion around those few items like that. And if you want to build that into the plan, we certainly could. If you're, you know, if you don't want to take Dave Cedarquist's approach, that staff will just raise the issue and we go, hey, wait a minute. You had the keys to the substation. You hired the subcontractor. You put that back in. You know, put that back in. Don't take that out as a major event day. And if they... And if they want to argue with us, then
so you favor the lower minutes with more interplay, like we do now. That's right. I guess for me, it's that if we're going to have the higher minutes, the you'd have to make sure you have more restrictive restrictions in how we determine the event days. It's like kind of like one or the other.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I think that was it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Call. Mr. Grumman, do you have any further questions of Mr. Diller?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Simser. Mr. Simser.
I just had one quick one, Mike. There was a really good discussion about how the CME credits work, and Commissioner Calk was interested in, well, doesn't it just make sense to penalize the company? In your opinion, do the CME credits also work as that reduction in ROE itself?
It does. The agreement does not allow any of those costs to be passed on through rates.
I have nothing further.
Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
Yes, and I was just going to clarify. I'm assuming you know, but if you don't, we can refer to NSP. But the CME payment is a credit, not a check, correct?
That's a bill credit. That's how it's written.
And then one thing I didn't here, and if you know, fine. If not, just mention that it's NSP. But when the four outages are reached, that's what triggers the credit, or does the customer wait till the end of the year for the credit?
Yeah, somewhere in the application or in their testimony, I remember reading, I think May 1st of the following year, by May 1st of the following year. So you've got to go in there and search your systems, query your databases. It doesn't automatically trigger a check. It's a good point you're raising that would really bring the contact with the customer into focus. That sounds rather sounds like a lot of administration in doing that, but I can't answer that, and you'd have to talk to the company on it.
I just wanted to bring it out so that the commission is aware. The connection with the customer then could be a little delayed, and then there's a balance of how much expense you want to put into it for that benefit of that connection. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of Mr. Diller?
Maybe I could just – that prompts another question back. I didn't realize that, so I appreciate the question about the customer refund. So then your point about the direct customer impact really would be reduced because they could be mad, hot, mad in February but not get it for some period of time. And the time – the what-if scenario, I suppose, where when it comes time for the refund, the college kid is back home and they've shut down that account. What's your knowledge then of what that scenario would bring?
We kind of always face that whenever we're involved in refunds or credits. My understanding is the company always makes the greatest effort it can to track down people to give their money back, and if they don't manage to do that in 7 years, it goes across the street here to the lost and found, and the state gets it. But
all right, thank you, Mike.
All right, any further questions, Mr. Diller? Thank you, Mr. Diller.
Thank you.
Any further evidence to present?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Grumman. Mr. Simser, any further evidence to present?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
I have a question, if I could, Your Honor, for Ilana. If Scott Sheldon, our customer service fellow, I mean, he would be considered advisory staff, wouldn't he?
Yes, sir. Anybody who's not been appointed, advocacy is available as advisory.
Do you think there'd be any value of talking to him today in front of this group about what his thoughts would be about a $50 credit vice, return on equity? He deals with more customer calls than anybody here does. These folks have to agree to that, I think, but because if he's advisory staff, but there might be some value to get Scott's opinion on that.
Well, if you...
Maybe we could take a short break and give him a little warning.
Groups are against that, I obviously can get his input, but I think there might be some value to ask him questions on
this. Any concern about that?
We have no objection.
All right. Let's take a short recess at about 5 minutes and see what we got there.
Thank you, Your Honor. Alana, so will you talk to Scott and see what... Or who talks to him? He's like, I guess you're witness, right?
He'd be Mark's witness.
Mark, is he your witness, Mark?
Your witness.
Your witness?
Well...